Shango Erumale Shango Bojuba Eile Walomba Kuso Amabu Shango Yeye
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 that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
I'm gonna stay on the battlefield. I'm gonna stay on the battlefield. I'm gonna stay on the battlefield till I.
Calling out to everyone who would listen, it is time to move us all into another century. Time for freedom and racial and sexual justice. Time for women and children and men. Time for hands unbound. I had come into the city wearing peaceful breasts and the spaces between us smiled. I had come into the city carrying life in my eyes. And and they follow us in their cars with their computers, and their tongues crawl with caterpillars, and they bump us off the road, turn over our cars, and they bomb our buildings, kill our babies, and they slaughter our doctors maintaining our bodies, and their courts change into confessionals. But we kept on organizing, we kept on teaching, believing, loving, doing what was holy, moving to a higher ground, even though our hands were full of slaughtered teeth. But we held out our eyes, delirious with grace. But we held out our eyes, delirious with grace. This fight for our life. We need your hurricane voices. We need your sacred hands. I say, come, sister, brother, to the battlefield. Come into the rainforest. Come into the hood. Come into the barrio. Come into the schools. Come into the abortion clinics. Come into the prisons. Come and caress our spines. I say, come, wrap your feet around justice. I say, come, wrap your tongues around truth. I say, come, wrap your hands with deeds and prayer. You brown ones, you yellow ones, you black ones, you gay ones, you white ones, you lesbian ones. Come, 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 come to this battlefield called life. Call life, call life, call life, call life, call life, call life, 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 life.
Imagine the blue. door behind you, trying to hunt you down. But as a warrior queen, you chose another route, a route where you couldn't be found. You have to set our people free, an event that went down in history. Oh, Harriet, if you only knew how much I admire you. I do. Oh, Harriet, oh, Harriet, I salute you, I salute you. Oh, Harriet, oh, Harriet, I salute you.
Harriet, oh Harriet, where are you at? Harriet, oh Harriet, where are you at? Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host for this evening. We're so happy that you are able to join with us again, as always. We appreciate your patronage and your support over the months that we have had. We've got a real special program that we feel tonight in tribute to that beloved ancestor that we think we know so much about, but maybe we don't. And so I'm here tonight for us to talk about my beloved Harriet Tubman, Harriet Ross Tubman. So we thank you so much for being with us, and we hope that you can join and participate in this conversation. We have a wonderful guest who has done some magnificent tribute to our great ancestor, Ms. Jamie Rashae Jenkins. She's here with us tonight, who is no stranger to the Black Reality Think Tank. And so we are just so happy that the reason that we are doing this program tonight is that on Thursday of this week, Hollywood is going to present their version of this great ancestor, Harriet Tubman. And there is a possibility that this may be a better version than maybe some of the others that we might have seen or known about. There's a lot of misnomers about our great ancestors, so we kind of want to straighten that out for our listening audience tonight. We want to go back into the annals of history and provide you with some resources and some of the misinformation that was done about our great ancestor. A lot of work has been done on her lately. The University of Syracuse in Syracuse, New York, has focused on Harriet Tubman's work, her papers. They have done some good things. There were some questionable areas that I think some historians might challenge. But nevertheless, we want to highlight on her. We want to highlight with Ms. Jenkins tonight, Lachey, and find out what works has she done with our great ancestor, and what is it that she found in terms of her research and preparations for the things that she was going to do. And as also, she is an artist, and she's continuing to work with women and history and to empower our people through the visual arts. And so we wanted to talk about all of that tonight, because that's the kind of person that Harriet Tubman was, a revolutionary. She stayed on the battlefield. She died at 90 years of age. She didn't give up. Price tag on her head. She always faced danger. But she loved her people, and she wanted to fight for the liberation of our people. So we need some more Harriet Tubmans. We need to prepare our children to be Harriet Tubmans. And we need them to know that they are going to have to fight if we are going to be a liberated people. And so that's kind of the focus tonight of where we're going and what we're going to do. You know, we always do an ancestral profile, but tonight we're not going to forego that. This whole program is an ancestral profile for Harriet Tubman. So throughout our program, we're going to be talking about particular features for her and some things that she did, which will sort of complement the whole idea of an ancestral profile. So that's why we're doing that tonight for Harriet Tubman. And so, as I said, on Thursday of this week, the film will open in most theaters around the country, and you'll get a chance to see it. Hopefully you will. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to see it, and I want to see how it's presented and done. I want to do before I bring Ms. Lachey on, I just want to do a quick little profile for our audience, just a sort of preliminary and a little sort of a prologue to our whole program and what we have been looking at. One of the things that I think I wanted to remind our listening audience, and I'm sure that most of you know this anyway, is that most of what we know about our ancestors and history is done by historians from the past, and most of them have been Caucasians. They have written most of the history of our people. After the Black Power movement, you know, into the 60s and 70s, you began to find more academicians of the African-American perspective coming forward, and they were studying and beginning to write a clearer history of our people, and that's a good thing. And it's very important that we understand that, and we understand what had happened and how we have, in some cases, the omission from history. And then there have been negative images of ourselves. The great ancestor that we're talking about tonight, Harriet Tubman, one of the very clear and obvious injustices that were done to her is that wherever we saw her picture, we always saw the photograph of an older woman. We saw somebody in their 70s and 80s. And this sort of maybe made some audience or some readers who are unaware of the fact that she was a young woman when she was doing most of her fighting, that these images were not just, and that these were images to sort of strike an emotion and to do some of the things. So they very clearly were correct. And one of the things that this film does, and there are African-American directors, there were African-American writers, some of the researchers were African Americans, and hopefully their perspective was African-centered, and they were able to present Harriet in a much clearer light. But one of the things that in my research that I've done is I've always gone back and looked at the who's written what, and the most recent biography on Harriet Tubman was done by a Harvard historian. Her name is Catherine Clinton. She's a European-American, and she wrote a biography on Harriet Tubman called The Road to Freedom, and she published that in 2004. Now, Catherine Clinton is a more of a modern historian. She's probably a little bit more objective in her work. She also wrote a book that I used to use in my classrooms called The Plantation Mistress. She is a historian of the Old South, and she's written most of her work about slavery and the Old South. But she did a book back in 2004, and in her research, she indicated that one of the things that she found is that a lot of people that she talked to and some of the historians who were older who had looked at that history even went so far as to claim they weren't sure that Harriet Tubman was a real person. And that's how flaky the research was, prior to some of a new generation coming forward. And so most of the the research that we knew about Harriet Tubman came from a biography that was written in 1869 by Sarah Hopkins Bradford. She wrote a book in 1869 called Scenes in the Life of Harriet Tubman. Scenes in the Life of Harriet Tubman. And that book was loaded with problems, misnomers, racist ideas, very negative images of her in terms of that work. And so a lot of people who were doing research or teaching history and would learn about Harriet Tubman would be using that book. Because when you teach and when you're involved in education and giving information to people, that's the only source you have is what's been researched previously. So that's why today the teacher and the educator has to be specific. They have to be dogmatic. They have to be critical thinkers. They have to look at history and see that that doesn't make sense. Case in point, one of the things that was said about Harriet Tubman is that they said that, and we don't know, well, I think it, well, we do know, it was this this particular historian, Sarah Hopkins Bradford. She said that there was a $40,000 price tag on Harriet Tubman's head. Now, a critical thinker who understands history and knows history knows that $40,000 in the 1800s would have been equivalent today to almost $1 million. So clearly, if that kind of bounty would have been on her head, they would have caught Harriet Tubman, without a doubt. When John Wilkes Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln, there was only a $50,000 price tag on his head. And so we know that that was way out of the pocket. It was more probably like $200, $300 price tag. You know, if we run across her, we'll get her. If we don't, we won't. You know, kind of thing like that. So that's clearly one of the images. Then another thing that I have trouble with, even with the new modern historians, they seem to feel and deny that Harriet Tubman was able to free 300 Africans who were in captivity. They said that that was impossible to do. And most of them, and that's coming out of that school of historians out of Syracuse, mainly white historians, who said that it was probably more like 100, maybe even 50, that she might have freed over her lifetime. So critically thinking that, when we look at the communities that were developed in Canada and in some of these other areas, those numbers are large. And so that whole numerical, demographic, quantitative history is always troubling. And it's the same thing that they used to do about the slave ships. They would say that that maybe 5,000, 10,000 Africans were in total captivity, where we know that there's 10 million, if not more, that were in captivity. So there's a quantitative analysis that's done. And as I said, it's always usually done by people who have a vested interest in downwriting that history. Two things I want to mention, and then I'm going to bring a guest on. One of the big things that we saw, not only about Harriet Tubman and about a lot of the folk that were writing around those years, Frederick Douglass, the history of him, the history of Nat Turner, we know the injustice that William Styron did when he wrote the book on the Confessions of Nat Tony. That was just a complete hoax. But a good history of Nat Turner still has not been written to this day. There have been books that have written on slave revolts, but again, they were all downplayed, most of it. There was a Marxist historian by the name of Herbert Aptheker who did a real good job of writing a little bit more detailed history about many of the slave revolts. But that's always been downplayed, that Africans really did fight back. So that you understand that. And then the other thing that they wanted to always betray in terms of the historical writers is that Africans were really happy being enslaved, that they really weren't that discontented, that slavery wasn't really that bad. It wasn't that profitable. People didn't make a lot of money off of it. It cost them more money than they made. You know, and all of that stuff that we hear. And those are the historians that are attempting to defend the South. They were called slave apologists. And one of the largest, biggest one was a man named Ulrich Bonnell Phillips. He's U.B. Phillips. He wrote a book called American Negro Slavery. And he said that slavery was a benign institution, that it wasn't that serious. And so they were right into that. And then the other troubling perspective of history that was written were the abolitionists. The abolitionists were attempting to argue something, that slavery was wrong for America, and so they would downright it. They downright it by being excessive. And so if the Harriet Tubman numbers are not correct, then it may have been contributed a lot to the abolitionists who were trying to paint a different picture. And there's a warning that we need to have about the abolitionist movement. The abolitionist movement was not all about ethics and morality. It was more to it than that. There were other political agendas that was had that eventually would lead to a civil war that had nothing necessarily to do with the mistreatment of the Africans. Now, there were some that did care and were concerned about the horrible and harsh treatment, but most of it was not. It was political, just like the civil rights movement. You know, we had a lot of people that participated in the civil rights movement from outside. It's not to say that there weren't some that were conscientious and they thought that what was being done to blacks was wrong and evil, but most of the civil rights was different. John Kennedy was not that all-white hero savior that you think he was, just like Abraham Lincoln wasn't. Lyndon Johnson wasn't. A lot of that was a need for America to window dress itself. It was, at this point, America had traveled all over the world. We had warships all over the world, and they were trying to get people to deal with democracy and looking at that, and the question would always rise, well, how are you going to come over here and tell us how to do our people, but look what you're doing to your people? And that has been a consistent cry throughout the political world. And so America always needed to window dress itself and show that it was humanitarian and it did believe in democracy, which we know was not the case. And so those are individuals, a lot of times, are the ones that wrote history. And so in our history books, we'll get the story of this master liberator named Abraham Lincoln. That's which we know was not about that. You know, it was a political move. The South was economically gaining power, and they needed to shut it down. And the North was the big industrial. It was the rich of England. The South were the poor whites, and they were getting rich, and they were challenging the power of the North. And they would eventually be able to take over Congress and rule, kind of what we see today. You know, that Mitch McCollum and that whole group of bandits that are operating in the Senate, that they were basically from poor white background. You know, they weren't from that wealthy industrialist class. And they're just trying to maintain the Southern stronghold and keep that economic position powerful in the South. But anyway, this analysis that I've just given you is what happened to Harriet Tubman and her work. She has been discredited in some areas. She's been overplayed in others, underplayed in others, in other ways. And so hopefully this film will do some justice. And I've seen several reviews. There's a dynamic article that was in this past Sunday's New York Times. And I think it had a very interesting title. It said, Harriet Tubman Doesn't Need Myths. And so if you haven't seen that, you might want to grab a copy or go online and look at the New York Times Sunday edition. Let me see if I have the page that you might want to read. You might find the edition. It's it was in the Arts and Entertainment on page 12. Take a look at that. And, you'll see kind of where the film is going to go with it and what is it that they're going to do. Okay, so I'm ready to bring my wonderful good friend on, who's the guest. I've been so proud to have her be a part of the work that we've been doing here at the Black Reality Think Tank. She's been very instrumental in helping me, and particularly when we talk about education and teaching. She is an educator. She's from Dallas, Texas. She's a young woman, and she is a very strong, powerful historian, and not only in words, but she is in deeds. She is doing a lot of work right now, independent work. She has an organization called BOOM, B-O-O-M. I'll let her give you the correct acronym. And let her talk a little bit about some of what she's doing in the visual arts, in the spoken word. She's doing some things. And then even her own research and teaching. And so she's got the minds of our young people in her hands. And so I think she's going to bring truth. And I'm happy to work with her and know her. And I want to continue to do that. We're going to have a couple of programs coming up based on some things that she's doing. And she's agreed to come on in a couple of weeks or so, or maybe even a month. And we're going to talk about some other things that are also very powerful in this area. So to our listening audience, I want to bring on Ms. Jamie Lachey Jenkins. Good afternoon, Ms. Jenkins. How are you?
Hello. How are you, Dr. Rogers?
I'm wonderful. I am so wonderful. Thank you for joining me and agreeing to be here. And how's the weather in Dallas?
It's getting a little chillier.
Okay.
I don't like the cold because I'm a real Texan. I prefer the hot, heat. But
you came from
it's
Atlanta
not really
with me.
That cold.
Right. Yeah, you came from the Atlanta area with me, so you know what that's like. And now where I am right now, man, Wisconsin. So this is a different picture. But I'm going to be heading back real soon. Okay, I want to start off by asking you, why do you think, as from a young person's perspective, it's necessary to talk about Harriet Tubman? Why is that? There's a whole lot of people in history. If you go back through the annals of African American history, there's a lot of folk we could talk about, and a lot of them are critical and important. But why do you think it's so necessary to talk about this particular individual?
That's a really good question. Well, when I think about Mama Harriet, I think about the power of someone. I appreciate it when you did the introduction today. You talked about how young she was,
right.
And how that is not highlighted often when
right.
we look at the imagery of her.
Right.
As an educator and as a person who, in my own life, started my work really young, and as a person who was small,
I know you were.
There are a lot of parallels that led me to want to investigate her more. I think the other thing is, like, a lot of our movements, and I'm specifically talking about Black people, have had Black women at the helm. But often when we are taught history or exploring history, those women are overshadowed,
right.
And their stories are not considered in totality. And then finally, I was particularly interested in her audacity.
Okay.
And I think it's important for us to explore. So another thing I appreciate that you did in the introduction today was talk about like the revolutionary acts and the audacity of our people, because a lot of times when we are talking about civil rights or revolts, the history is distorted in ways that highlights, oh, they were afraid, or they were scared, or like, and so there's not a discussion about the boldness and audacity. And so a woman like this, who decided not just to free herself, but to work in collaboration with other people for their freedom, multiple times over,
okay,
with a gun. There, I think there's a lot of her story that has just been warped. And I was interested, as a person who believes in the power of invoking our ancestors and calling their names and bringing that energy back into the fold. She's somebody's energy. I think that we actually need to pull back in and do so with critical eyes and heart, so that we can bring back her total story and not these myths that are often perpetuated and celebrated.
Exactly. I like that. Oh, I like that. Like that. Because you're right. We need to bring her back in the spirit. I put a photograph on Facebook just maybe about an hour and a half ago, and it's a statue of Harriet Tubman and a young black girl staring her in her eyes. She's down on her knees staring at her, and I thought mm-hmm. that was so relevant to what the theme of our program is today, is we've got to get our folk to see that spirit so that they will continue to want to be on the battlefield and continue to stay out here and fight and do what's necessary to make change, really do. And I think it works. I really do. I'm with you, Jamie. I think it really does work. Do you find young people your in your age category, do you find them embracing folk like Harriet, looking at her? Is that something that's a conversation piece, or is it just in passing?
You know, what's interesting is this day and age, I appreciate you calling me young, because okay. there are people younger than me. And I think what has happened in this current time is because we are saturated with so much information through social media, through television, through entertainment, things become like a passing thought. So like, I did that project and released it on Juneteenth. And that was an intentional day. And it was a conversation piece that day. And then that was it. Okay. We've moved on.
Okay.
And so I do think more conversation and more intention around our ancestors is necessary, because I think beyond just like the celebrations, we've lost connection to the cultural practice of us doing that. Like, that is a part of our ancestral history to do that,
right,
to call back our ancestors. And we've forgotten that. Like, we're so far gone that now we're related to our ancestors in the same way that the Western world does, which is like, we'll read a book and they are a historical figure in history. And it's like, that's not the way that we engage,
right,
culturally. And so I think it's critical. I appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Because it is, it's something that is beyond just some knowledge, you know, some facts that we need to know. This is a spiritual practice that we need to reengage with.
That's right. So now tell me a little bit about what is it that you did in your production of Harriet Tubman. What did you do? Give us a little background of you know, starting that and what, you know, some of the results and things like that.
Sure. I'll give the context first of a lot of my art projects start from a spiritual space. I'll have a dream or a premonition or something like that. And then it's like, okay, so I take it as a spiritual assignment. I decided that I wanted to release this on Juneteenth because the narrative around Juneteenth, this day that we are quote unquote freed, which I think is problematic for us. This is my personal opinion. I think it's problematic for us to think that we were freed by way of an Emancipation Proclamation by a man who actually did not care about our freedom. And so we celebrate this day of like, oh, look at our freedom. And that's like, no, we had already been free. And here is an example of somebody who knew she was free And that is why I did the piece on Harriet Tubman and released it on Juneteenth. Okay. As a statement of like, no, we are free people. Our ancestors are free people. What happened to them was you have enslavers, you have captors of free people. Right. So we have to reject this terminology, and we need to stop. I think we need to stop calling our ancestors slaves. We need to stop doing that and okay. stop taking on this terminology from the people who have colonized our people, other people. Like, we got to stop using their words for our people and for ourselves. Right. That's number one. And right. so that was one of the intentions of the piece. The other thing was, it's a 1 minute piece, it's a visual piece, it's a video. Okay. And I was really intentional about the use of color.
Okay.
And the play between showing her in the imagery of what people have seen from enslavement, okay. as well as the imagery of a divine being, of a god. Mm. And so giving the reminder that, like, we are eternal beings. That's why we're still talking about her now. And we are divine beings.
Okay.
And we can't allow ourselves to get caught up in the what's the word that I want to say? The demeaning
okay.
and the belittling right. of right. our identities.
Right.
And so the whole point of the project was to like reclaim her totality, reclaim her divinity, and then reclaim it for ourselves as well.
Right.
And so that was there were a lot of thought, even down to the song choice that's in there. It's Bound for the Promised Land, and it sounds really eerie. but this is a song, one of the only songs that was confirmed that she actually used. There are other songs that was said that she used. Okay. But this is a song that, from her mouth, Bound for the Promised Land, she used and sung. And so I put that as the backdrop okay. to the piece.
Good.
So yeah, it was just a lot of thought about how to reclaim her full story, and reclaim her humanity and divinity, through the visual art.
Okay. I like that. I like that. Coming on our introduction, I opened up with, several pieces with Sweet Honey in the Rock in the background. And there was a poem by Sonia Sanchez about very much what you just said, and that spiritual piece and what that does to drive us forward. And then there was a song that was written specifically for Harriet Tubman by a young woman out of New York. And that was a very powerful piece as well. But you're right. One of the best ways, I think, and very clearly this is what you've done, one of the best ways of being able to express the significance of this is through art. Art can do that. And obviously you have used that and by doing what you told. Now, is that 1 minute clip online or is it somewhere where maybe our audience could take a look if they wanted to?
Yep, it's on YouTube and it's on Facebook, and so I can link it to you so that you can share it out.
Oh, good. Okay, great. I definitely do that. Please do that. And and I think, like you said, it can awaken some things. Art can do that. It can awaken the spirit. I think the art historian Robert Ferris Thompson wrote a book called Flash of the Spirit. And he was talking about, have you ever chance to ever read that book?
No, I haven't.
It's almost a Bible for understanding the spirituality of art and what art can do.
And you said that's called Flash of the Spirit?
Flash of the Spirit. His name is Robert Ferris, Ferris Thompson. He's a Caucasian, but he's definitely awakened to some things. And he was really into studying African art. And he even goes down to the point of explaining why Picasso painted in African colors and African design. Because, you know, Picasso, a lot of Picasso's work was African. And he talked about what was the driving factor, you know, in terms of that kind of aesthetics, you know, in looking at that. Okay, so please send that. And for those of our listening audience, you can look for us online to, I will put that on the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page. You will be able to go in and take a look at Miss Lachey's production. It is a production. You're playing Harriet, correct?
Yes.
Okay, right. Good enough. And so I want to make sure you do that. Now, tell me a little bit about your art. We're gonna come back to Harriet, but I want you to tell me, since we're talking about art, tell me about what you're doing mm-hmm. in terms of your artwork and your visualization of things through art.
Sure. So I have a couple of different mediums. So I like to play around in different spaces. I love music. I love performance art. I love videography. I love photography. I love collage. So I play in all those different things. I paint, I sketch, but I have intention. And so I'm an educator first.
Right.
That's all I've ever wanted to be. And so even with art, my intention with it was not really about, there are artists out here, they're like, I want to sell. And I ain't hating on that at all. I feel like we need to compensate right. artists for their work. For me though, my intention wasn't about selling art. And that's a nice bonus if it happens. My intention was about our rebalance. We are suffering from serious trauma and serious imbalance
as a
human race, as well as a Black race, right? And so I thought about art in the same way that many of our ancestors did. It is a spiritual language and tool. And so my intentions with it is always about spiritual healing. And so I use a number of different things. So with the Harriet piece, there was thought about like invoking this ancestor, flashes of red. Red mm-hmm. is about calling forth the ancestor. That's the color for the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Flashing the blue, which is about the remembrance of water and life. And so like using like this juxtaposition of the spirit of divinity and the spirit of the human, the duality that is true in our ancestry. So that was in that piece. But some of the other works that I've done, so I had some pieces that went into the African American Museum of Dallas, and they were fabric collages. And that also came from a dream. That series was called the Secret Society of the Womb Guardians. And so I had a dream about these women, and they were sitting around a fire talking about initiation and the lost art of initiation. Mm. Initiation was our educational system, or part of our educational system prior to this schooling system that we're in now, right? And so they were talking about the need to return so that we remember. Mm. And so when I came out of that dream, I created these fabric collages of four women who represented the elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And they have West African names. And they are, the colors are intentional, as well as there are crystal stones inside of each of the pieces that represent a healing energy. So mm. selenite is in one piece, lapis lazuli is in another piece. And so it's a lot of thought around like what are the spiritual energies that we need to call forth to rebalance ourselves and reject some of this trauma and some of this fear energy that we've absorbed from other cultures. And so a lot of the work that I'm doing is about that. It's about healing and it's about education.
Wow, wow. Hey, Jamie, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know you've been here before, right? You know that, right?
I'm sure. I'm sure.
You know, the old folks used to say, yeah, that boy been here before. Yeah, you've been there before. Ain't no doubt about that. Okay. You know, it's something interesting in combination to what you were saying. I've always kind of had a interest in it, but not at the level I've recently gotten since I've been here in Milwaukee again, is into crystals. I have a good friend here. She and her husband have a business where they do crystal jewelry for folk. Melissa Blue Turner, Muhammad rather, I'm sorry, Melissa Blue Muhammad, she does crystals. And she's really got, she's made several pieces for me since I've been here, along with the explanation of what they do and how they draw energy or repel negative energy from your spirit and from your life. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of, and it really is centered around those colors and those interesting colors. That's why I used to always say years ago down south, we used to laugh at the country boys that wore red socks. So like you see a guy with some red socks on and a red hanger and a red tie, we laugh at him. You know, them old country bumpkins. But no, that's African. That's what that was. That wasn't country. Mm-hmm. That was African stuff. You know, because we are drawing the colors in that way. And that's why things like mm-hmm. kente cloth and stuff like that is so so critically important to us. So now you're getting ready to do an art exhibit, exhibit, correct?
Several. So in 2020, I have the blessing of being a part of a number of exhibits, along with several Black women artists. And so when I had the opportunity to be a part of the African American exhibit, that was the first all-female exhibition in that museum, in the museum's history. It was curated by this phenomenal woman named Jennifer Cowley.
Okay.
And the women of that exhibition, some of them have their own galleries. A number of them have been like in work for a long time. Some of them have works in the homes of like Denzel Washington. And so these women decided to come together as a collective and think about how can we as Black women artists put more of our work to the fore? Because if all of the other arenas out here are underrepresented by Black women,
okay,
art, the art world is definitely. And so they decided to start creating spaces. And so I'm in a number of exhibitions with these women.
Right. You know, I think we're getting ready to, I've always seen a Harlem Renaissance coming back, a renaissance of Black art culture. Yeah, so I know that's happening.
We're in it right now.
Yeah,
I wanted to write about this, but we are definitely in a renaissance. And I think it's important that we start talking about it and capturing this because I don't know if we recognize how revolutionary and historic this moment is.
That's right. And, you're going to come back on. And like I said, a couple of months, we're going to talk about art, as a cultural, importance. So you and I had talked about that, and then we were also going to talk about some things about the Black woman. We won't talk about that, but so I'll just tease our audience a little bit. I won't get too much into it. The only thing I will say is that, you know, I don't know, somebody I know promised me to send me some pictures of their artwork and so that I could look at them and buy them. I don't know what happened to that person that was supposed to be. Do that. You know that person?
I don't know who you're talking about.
I don't know who it is either. I forgot it too. But anyway, we'll get to her. I'll find her and I'll get her. Okay, let's go back to Harriet. Now, you know, Harriet, in terms of preparing your script and your thoughts as it relates to her, did you come across any research that you might want to share with us that you thought might have been very unique about her that wasn't known before?
Oh, that is a really good question.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of the things were some of the things that you were sharing in the beginning, Dr. Rogers.
Right.
This piece around, like, the debate between how many people she actually helped to get to Canada, the piece around even down to, like, the roles that she played in the Civil War.
Right.
Like, knowing that she was a spy and how that's never talked about. Like,
right.
That's never discussed. It's never discussed that she's the first woman, period. Not first Black woman, Black.
Exactly.
She's the first woman, period, to lead an armed raid in this nation, right? And that's never talked about.
That's right.
So, like, I think that's interesting that it's not talked about because the other thing that is, the other thing that I did in that video was I pulled the gun up and shot it, right? And it's a suggestion.
Okay.
It's a reimagination of her story, saying that we know that this gun was used in the event that somebody wanted to turn around, right, to scare people to keep going. And my reimagination was like, what if this gun was also used to tell people, like, and I'm talking about white folks, like, what I'm not about to do is go back with you.
Right.
And
right.
We don't know.
We don't.
Right.
We don't know that part.
I think a lot about, so what you were talking about with Nat Turner, when we think about Denmark Vesey, when we think about a lot of the revolutionaries in our history, the narratives that are told around them are also narratives that downplay, like, what possibly could have happened. My questioning was, is it also possible that that gun was used in other ways?
I got you.
Is that possible?
It is possible.
When I saw that she led an armed raid for the U.S.
yeah, right.
Army,
yeah.
I was like, I think that's it's probable. I think it's more probable than possible.
Yeah.
But we won't be able to talk about that. Well, I will.
Right.
But we haven't talked about that or even made that suggestion because of what you mentioned earlier, the
right.
frightening of folks. This is the reason why we present the elderly Harriet Tubman
exactly.
as an image.
Exactly.
We can't get people here to start thinking, oh, it's possible for you to think of yourself as free and revolt as a young person.
Right.
We can't give people that encouragement. So
exactly right.
there were some things that I just discovered along the way or just was reminded of along the way because I hadn't really dug deep into studies of her since college, you know.
Okay.
And so revisiting her stories. The other thing that you mentioned about the scenes in the life of Harriet.
Right.
The funny thing about what you were mentioning was I bought that book. And had the intentions of reading it, along with several other books.
Okay.
And I could never, like, after I bought it, I could not find it for the life of me. I could not find that book.
Well, good.
when you were talking about it, I was like, oh, somebody got involved. It's like, nah, this is trash. Like,
yeah.
We're not,
right, exactly.
We're not reading this.
Yeah, it is.
So I can't even find the book.
Yeah, I did
but,
that.
Yeah,
I,
everything
I read
that you
it.
Mentioned.
But I've read it. I read it in a historiography class. I read it on writing history, critiquing the way you write history. And the professor that taught me that class, the class where I took it, himself said it was a bunch of mess. And this is what happens when non-historians write history. And we talked about aspects of it at that point. But a lot of it was just the way, because the woman that wrote it was used to writing about people like Alexander the Great, folk like that, you know, white hero worshippers. You know, a lot of early history was written as hero worshiping. So they wrote it to pump it up. I mean, I'll be honest, and I think I've talked about this on the program before. A lot of times African Americans wrote history to hero worship. Writing about the good stuff because there was so much negative stuff. When people like George Washington Williams, who was writing back in the 1800s about black history, he was an African-American, George Washington Williams. As a matter of fact, John Hope Franklin wrote his biography before he died. He wrote feel-good history. You know, a lot of people, they write feel-good history. They want you to write about the good stuff, you know, and, you know, things like that. And that was, it was understandable from our perspective because there was so much negative stuff written. You know, we wanted at least, let's write something better. And so a lot of that about Harriet Tubman may very well have been by our own people in an attempt to write feel-good history. But now we know that you can't. You got to write critical history. The statement that you often hear by her, I freed a thousand from slavery, but I could have freed a thousand more. All the historians are saying she didn't say that.
That was something else too.
Definitely, she didn't say.
I found that wasn't even her statement.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, like doing the research ahead of this, because there's a lot
right.
attributed to her
right.
that's not even her story, and then there's so much that is her story that's not told.
That's not told.
That was
exactly
fascinating.
Right. That's exactly right. About her family life. You know, there's some stuff in there about her family life that was powerful. The fact that she interacted very heavily and quite frequently with Frederick Douglass, John Brown. She was very active with John Brown. Who's to say what she didn't do with John Brown? I don't know. She might have helped done some stuff, helped him out on some things. He might have helped her out on some stuff.
Right.
When it came to John Brown, you know, and obviously very clearly John Brown's history is not done well.
That's not
pro Archon. You know, that's always been that he was crazy. You know, he had a mental problem, you know, all kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
was said about John Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but for the
same reasons, right? Because you also, so there are white folks in history who were radical enough to try to push against. They're not every white person.
Not everyone.
Just like
right.
not every black person.
Right.
So the white people who were radical enough, they did, like their stories are torn down.
Right.
John Brown being one of them. And we got to think about why that happens, right? Like you don't want white folks, because we forget about the parts of history where there have been white folks who have revolted against white folks.
Exactly.
And that is erased from our history too. And so we don't want this class of people, this group of people to know that history.
Right.
That's just as dangerous as black folks knowing the revolutionaries in their history. And
that's
so I think
right.
it's important. It's one of the things that I loved about Amos Wilson, where Dr. Amos Wilson did an excellent job of discussing multiple cultural and racial histories.
Oh, yeah.
And what we need to learn from each other and being clear about, like, what you're saying. Like, we got to know how to be critical, right? Like,
yes.
you got to know what to take and what not to take. You also got to know, like, how to look across the aisle
right.
and say, like, okay, this part of the history, that part of the history. And so, yeah, same thing happened with John Brown. And we don't talk about what that has done to our society either when we do that to activists, white activists.
Right, exactly. I agree. And like I said, the civil rights movement is a clear example of it, too. You know, what
mm-hmm.
went on in the civil rights movement. That story hasn't been told yet well yet. We don't know that full picture, not like
mm-hmm.
we should know it. And even at that time, the brother Claiborne Carson wrote a lot about the civil rights history. But still, it was more of an informational kind of history as opposed to an interpretive history of the civil rights movement. I want to know what the relationship was between Adam Clayton Powell, Martin Luther King, because they did talk, and Malcolm X. And we don't know that because we're not getting that. We don't know what that conversation was. Bayard Rustin. The only thing we get mm-hmm. about Bayard Rustin it was mm-hmm. homosexual, but no, Bayard Rustin was a powerful dude. Powerful.
Yeah, he's responsible. Like,
yes, yes.
He's responsible for that
yes.
whole movement happening. It couldn't have happened
without Bayard Rustin.
There's so many people like that we don't get to talk about. And
right.
I do think it's important that we understand like what it does when we erase pieces of their identities. Like he was a man who cared for other men.
Right.
And like that part of his identity had to be silent.
Right.
They requested that he
right.
silence it.
Exactly.
And so like they did that in hopes that it would serve the mission. And I think that's complicated because like when we think about what's going on with us today, and like what impact did we have,
right?
Right? What do we still have to work on? And so, like, these pieces around our identities and the complexities of those. Like, you and I have had conversations about, like, the black mother and black woman. And the ways in which we've had to shut down our identities in service of the mission. But is it really serving our mission when we do that?
Right.
So I think you're right. There's so much in our history that just is not explored in depth. And it's because of what you talked about, right, Dr. Rogers? It's we haven't had historians with our lens who are also critical,
right?
Who understand it's important to do a balanced history. We don't want to just do this hero history and we don't tell the full complexities. But we've also primarily had European Americans and Europeans doing the history, even down to like our African history,
right.
Archaeological digs and all of that. That's right. Primarily done by exactly. white folks. And so we're missing whole pieces of our story.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why people like Amos Wilson, Malefi Asante, Marlena Karenga, all of them were so important because they were writing a lot. They couldn't do it all. And see, one of the things you got to understand about history is a lot of politics involved because, in order for you to get your ability to do research, is that you got to go to one of these universities and work on a graduate level degree in order to access certain parts of the library.
Yeah.
There are parts of the library mm-hmm. you can't go to unless you're working on a graduate degree. So where that real mm-hmm. critical information mm-hmm. is, you need to go there. And so and that's what Du Bois was trying to set up at Clark Atlanta. He was trying to set up a laboratory where people like you, when you came along, could go in there and study the real critical things. And very clearly, the United Methodists shut him down. They wouldn't let him do it. So he had to, find something else. But that's the kind of thing we have to understand, trying to be able to find a way to do that. And that's why community schools, I keep saying it, is the answer. It really is. Saturday schools, whatever we want to call it. Jamie, I'm going to take a quick break and then I'm going to come back to the audience. We got some of our good friends on who always have a powerful amount of knowledge, and they may have some questions they want to ask you. We're going to take a break, give you a chance to go fill up your teacup, and then we'll come right back and open up the lines and see what some of our audience might want to ask. This is the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Central Time. 7 to 9 Central Time. So we welcome you. This is a call-in format, and we do welcome you to call in, ask us your questions, or make suggestions. The call-in number is area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. We'd love to hear from you. And maybe have you add to this conversation. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Ain't gonna let nobody
to freedom land.
Ain't gonna let the Lord jail.
are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All right, Sweet Honey and the Rock. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. We're clearly the replica of the life and times of the great ancestor, Harriet Ross Tubman. So we're here with, I'm here with my very good friend from Dallas, Texas, Ms. Jamie Lachey. She has been giving us some wonderful analysis of her work in terms of what she's done in the research of Harriet Tubman. And so it's now time for us to go to my friends out here in the audience and hear what they have to say. Before I do that, I just want to let you know again that this is the Black Reality Think Tank. We're here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10. We are part of the TimeForAnAwakening.com network, which is a part of Black Talk Radio Network. Our program is sponsored by Motherland Media, which is the creation of my good friend, Brother Osiemi Adelabu, who also produces a program called African Perspectives. And that program airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time here on this network, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on this network. So we're appreciative of him and the work he is doing as well in helping us. Also, there's another program that's a part of the Motherland Media Network called the Black People Matrix, which airs at 1 o'clock from 1 to 3 Eastern Time here. Franklin Jones is the promoter and the director of that program. And so he's here every evening. And then on the weekends, on Friday from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening, which is done by Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. Brother Elliot is the creator and developer of the Time for an Awakening Network. So his program airs on Friday night from 8 to 10, and also on Sunday from 7 to 10. That's Brother Elliot right here, timeforanawakening.com. And if you miss any of our programs, you can always go to our archive, www.timeforanawakening.com, and get any of the programs that have played or have aired before and listen to them 24/7. So please do that. Again, we appreciate you. We appreciate you listening. We're trying to move things forward in the liberation movement. I want to be a part of it. I don't want to just sit around and do nothing, talk and complain. I want to work too. And so I'm out here trying to do whatever I can to make that happen, and just like you are. So ain't nothing going to turn me around, nothing. And I'm going to stay on the battlefield, as Sweet Honey and the Rock told us at the opening of our program. So let me go over here always to my good friend, Brother Herbie White, from Durham, North Carolina. Brother White, you going to see Harriet this weekend?
If I don't see it this weekend, I'll see it soon.
Okay. What you got to say about our beloved sister?
Yes. I said good evening, Dr. Rogers, and Hotep to Sister Jamie. Been a pleasure sitting here listening to her.
Yes, sir.
And what I like to say is, Dr. Rogers, you familiar with Durham. You're from here in Durham.
Right.
So you're familiar with the landscape of Durham.
Yes, I do.
And there's a lot of wooded areas. And sometimes when I'm driving, I pass in wooded areas and I look, and you can only see 10 or 15 feet into the wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, Sister Harriet walked through that for hundreds of miles.
Mm-hmm.
At night.
Mm, that's true.
And I would be scared just to walk in there right now.
Right.
And lay down and sleep.
Right.
Maybe it was cold. Maybe it was raining.
Yes, that's right.
Sometimes I sit around the house and try to figure out what I'm going to go get out of the refrigerator and put in the microwave. What kind of food did they have to take with them?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That, you know, if people, if you just want to, just walk into the wooded area sometime and stand there and look around and think about how it would feel if you had to stay there all night, laying down on the ground.
Right.
You could be walking and walk off a cliff. Because I know they didn't have no flashlights and they didn't make no light. And no, you couldn't see what you were doing.
That's right. No maps.
That was amazing.
Amazing. You know, I'm glad you said that because, you know, we got a homeboy. Homeboy. He's an ancestor and he was an elder named Miles Mark Fisher. Did you know Dr. Miles Mark Fisher?
No, I didn't.
Okay, Miles Mark Fisher was the pastor of White Rock back in the, I think, 40s and the 50s, even before my time. Well, you know, he was a college professor, too. He wrote a book on the Negro spirituals and how they used them as signals for the Underground Railroad. It's a powerful book. Ask Bruce. Bruce has it in his bookstore. He knows about him. By the way, how's he doing? How's my brother doing?
He's doing good. He said he's going to be listening in tonight.
Oh, good. Okay. I miss talking to Bruce. But anyway, Dr. Bridges can tell you about that Miles Mark Fisher history. He wrote a book that was a very active part of the academic research on the Underground Railroad. Because they used that as a signal, like when you said wade in the water. They sang that when the water was not too deep. And then when they got to Deep River, they sang Deep River, as a part of that, you know. And then, so that's a serious history. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because Durham definitely...
Yeah, I have a GPS system in my car, and I still get lost.
Right. You're right about that. You're surely right about that. No doubt about it. You know, and then those dogs. You know, they had those dogs, man. You're talking about $500, $600 to $1,000, $1,500 of merchandise being stolen. You know, that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with, folks that really were angry. You know, and however it was attributed, you know, most of the anger was leaned toward the white abolitionists, because what a lot of times the Southerners said is that the blacks couldn't have did it if it hadn't been for the whites. You know how that goes. You know that story. Just like they did in the Civil Rights Movement, which is a bunch of mess, you know. I think you're right. When you sit back and you really think about what that must have been like consider how they were able to. They traveled by the moon, used the stars, the Big Dipper, and all of that. You know, it's just heartwarming.
Sometimes the stars wasn't out.
That's right. Sometimes it was cloudy. Then what did they do? You know. I've read somewhere that as a historian, I can't put total documentation that is true. I don't know, Jamie, if you heard this as well. Do you know the origin of hush puppies?
No.
Have you ever heard that, brother White?
It must be the origin.
Well, they used to make, before they would run away and go, they would make cornbread. And it would be hot, you know, and obviously have, you know, some smell to it. And when the dogs were coming near them, they would throw that cornbread to stop them from barking and being able to pick up their scent, because the dogs would then pick up that scent of that cornbread, and it would throw them off track.
Huh.
Now, I'm just not quite remembering where I did read that. I know I read it somewhere historically, but that was the source of hush puppies. You know, I mean, I love hush puppies, but they were thrown to throw those dogs off track, you know, the scent, to be able to pick up that scent and to throw them
interesting.
Out.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Well, Brother White, I appreciate it, as always. Thank you so much for your input. Anything else you want to say, additional?
No, like I said, I just think about how amazing that had to be.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Brother Pugh, how you doing tonight? What do you say about our dear sister? I know you're going to see the movie, aren't you?
Well, I wasn't familiar with the movie. I wasn't aware. Brad, I've seen all kinds of ads about that. Okay, yeah, I guess I'll eventually get to see it.
Okay.
I'm really refreshed just by her spirit, you know, the idea that, you know, she takes seriously, you know, the intellectual warfare, you know, that's going on, and she's actually out there doing the work. Identifying images that are harmful to us and identifying images that are helpful and, you know, using her artistic creativity to bring those helpful images forward. So it's really inspiriting, you know, just to listen to her.
Right.
One of the questions that I would wonder is that do you have a website, or is there, you know, any way that anyone can see any of your materials?
Sure. My website is my name, so it's jlashay.com. That's jlashay.com. And so I'm also on all of the social media platforms. I got back on recently. I was kind of anti, but I got back on for this particular purpose.
Okay. Right. Right. Well, I would say I'm really, really impressed. Now, what grades do you teach, and what do you teach?
Well, I started off as a history teacher for high school students. Then from there, I went on to coach teachers, and now I have my own consulting practice. So I work with education organizations, schools, and districts on incorporating social justice into their practices. Then I also run a nonprofit for Black and Brown children that's called BOOM, Building Opportunities and Opening Minds, and that works with all ages.
Oh, okay. Now that you mentioned the coaching thing, I'm wondering. I'm thinking of this this revolutionary teacher, Bettina Love. Are you familiar with her at all?
No. Could you tell me more?
What's the title of the book that she just wrote? Something. It's something like "Survival Is Not Enough" or something to that effect. Let me just see if I can. If I can get it quickly. Bettina Love, but she is somebody who, considers herself an abolitionist educator. It just struck me that her spirit, the title of her piece is "We Want to Do More Than Survive." Abolitionist teaching and the pursuit of educational freedom. And it just strikes me that, you know, that, you know, the spirit of her work is, you know, really in the same lane, you know, as what you're doing, and just, you know, really compliments you quite a bit.
I'm going to check her out.
Quite a bit. Bettina Love is her name. I'm enjoying it, Dawson.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. I've got before I go over here to my brother Griffin and brother Timothy, I've got a caller, area code 586-573. I'm not sure if you want to say something or you're just listening, but we'll open up your mic to see if you want to say something.
Yes, sir, I would like to say something. Can I be heard?
Please, yes, you can.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Rogers.
Thank you.
And I had a question for your guest.
Okay.
Forgive me, could I get your website address again, please, this time slowly?
Sure. Yes, ma'am. So it's J as in Jamie,
uh-huh.
L as in Love,
uh-huh.
E as in Echo,
uh-huh.
S as in Star,
uh-huh.
H as in Hero,
uh-huh.
A as in Apple,
uh-huh.
E as in Echo.
Okay.
.com.
Thank you. .com. Okay, thank you. Listen, I wanted to ask you a question, if you don't mind. I'm just curious. Have you seen this movie, Harriet, already? Forgive me if you already talked about that.
I have not seen the movie.
Okay, I saw where it was released in September. I guess that's last month. Now, my question, I haven't seen it either, but my question to you is as follows, and I may need to give you just a little bit of background and to set the context for the question, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple months ago or whatever, I read this article called My Grandfather, the Slave Trader. It was written by a Nigerian woman whose grandfather was a slave trader, and the family was proud of it. And this is a black family, black African family, and they had accumulated some wealth because of the work of their grandfather, you know. Now, so that let me know, of course, that, okay, there were black slave traders in Africa, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the actress who plays Harriet, Cynthia Erivo, I believe her name is.
Right,
maybe
right.
She's
I
a British actress.
Uh-huh.
British actress. I don't know that, I don't know this, whether or not she may be a descendant from some of those African slave traders or not. But say she was. I don't know that she is. I don't mean to disrespect her or anything, but say that she was a descendant from some of those black African slave traders, and she's playing Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
And would that be something you'd have a problem with?
You know, I think this is an important conversation for us to have. I'm glad you brought that up. And I haven't really thought about whether I have a problem with it or not, if I'm honest, but I want to sit with that and think about if I do. I think, though, I have some concerns about us not exploring that history and not discussing it, you know?
Yes, ma'am.
I think it's critical for us to discuss what happened because there is trauma and hurt there. And because we have not discussed it, it has opened up a wound. I think that's an ancestral wound and then a spiritual wound that we need to address because that is important that we have someone who does not come from the diasporic history in regards to what happened here in this land playing that role. And there is not consideration of what that means in the history of what has happened to our people, amongst our people, right, from the continent to this land. So I think that's a powerful question that you're asking there. And I definitely want to think about, like, how I feel about it because I actually haven't thought deeply about it. I had, I did have some curiosity about her placement in the role.
Yes.
But I also know, being in the United States, that there isn't as much critical thought about those kinds of things. It's kind of like, well, she's black. Harry was black. We just gonna put her in the role, right? And she's a great actor, and she's a performer, and she's you know, phenomenal in all of these different ways. And so we'll just put her in the role because she can play the role. But we're not thinking about what you're talking about right now, which is like the spiritual implications, the harm that has been done, the discussions that we have not had, the healing that needs to happen, and what it means when we do that haphazardly without thought. I'm glad you asked that question.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yes, ma'am. That's all I had. I was just curious because since reading that article, I look at things a little bit differently because, you know, like you said, you know, that's something a lot of us haven't really, you know, so, I mean, it's real. And and even when we talk about the reparations conversation, hey, are we owed some from those folks over there too?
Right.
And I'm told that a lot of the quote-unquote black immigrants, African immigrants, a lot of them come from the upper echelon of those folks in Africa. Not that they're necessarily smarter, brighter, what have you, it's just that they got the means. Where did they get those means?
Right. That's a good point. It is. That is, and I, you know, I saw that article somewhere, too. I don't remember.
The New Yorker.
It was in the
you're right.
I was looking it up when you said it. I started looking it up because I was like, I need to read this, and it's in the New Yorker.
It's in the New Yorker. Yeah. Okay, yeah, and I know she is from Nigerian parents. I did read that in the New York Times article about the movie. But if I could, yeah, you know, let me say in reference to what the question you asked, Ms. Lachey, I would think I would have to go to the nature and the spirit of Hollywood. And how they do stuff.
Yes, sir.
And I think that that's always going to be problematic. You know, particularly how a film is created, who are the producers behind it. You know, I would want to see some of that stuff, you know, involved in order to in answering that question, because very clearly that does seem to be a clash of ideas to have a person who would put her spirit into Harriet Tubman, but at the same time her bloodline comes from enslavers, you know, how that would happen. So, but it is a very good question. I think it's a long-term discussion that I would like to see or have at some point, you know, in terms of doing that. So thank you very much for raising that. Do you have a position on the question that you have? Yes.
It's a bit problematic for me, yes, sir. Because, I mean, if that's the case, again, I don't know anything about the actress, Miss Erivo, Miss Cynthia. Erivo, yes, sir. But I know that, let me give you a quick example right quick. I remember one time I was at City Hall, you know, in my local City Hall, and there was a black man in the lobby there working on his iPad or phone, one of the two. I noticed him because at City Hall, I rarely see black folks that work there. So I struck up a conversation with the man and found that he was from, I forget what country in Africa, but as the conversation continued, I found myself getting, a little annoyed because he was of the position that black folks here in the States are lazy, trifling, aren't taking advantage of the opportunities that are here, and et cetera, et cetera. I forget how we got to that subject.
Okay.
But I found myself containing myself and keeping, you know, trying to, you know, well, be polite and, you know, let them know, you know, that, well, hey, in a lot of ways, black folks here have bled and died and for opportunities for black peoples to have slots in certain places. Okay.
Right.
There's a long history of us fighting for that stuff.
Right.
And to have black immigrants who may or may not be descendants of black slaveholders, slave traders,
right,
come and take up those slots. And then, turn around and slam people who have fought to make those slots open. Maybe I'm getting a little off the topic here, but yeah, I find that problematic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for calling. I hope you will listen to us again.
Yes, sir, I will.
Yeah, have a real good day. Have a real good day. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We are here at Black Reality Think Tank. We are talking with Ms. Jamie Lachey Jenkins, and we are talking about our dear, beloved ancestor, the great Harriet Tubman.
Dr. Rogers, can I say something real quick?
Sure, go right in. Uh-huh.
I think the last statement was something that's really important to dig into because I think I mentioned to you I've been traveling to the continent quite a bit in the past several years.
Right.
And what I was seeing is something similar to what I'm seeing here. And it's like Africans on the continent and Africans here are given different stories about our histories,
right,
our respective histories,
right,
to each other. And so it's very limited. And so what then happens is like Africans on the continent have a particular stereotype that comes from what they're being told, what they see, the imagery that they see on TV, which is very limited to like pop culture and the very limited history that they are given through European standards.
Okay.
And then the same thing is happening over here in regards to our understanding of what happened in Africa, what is happening in Africa. And so I think that conversation that you want to potentially have in the future is going to be a critical one to bring some voices from folks from the continent as well as voices from people across the diaspora, including this land, so that we can heal. Because I think we're being told different things about each other, and it is impacting the way in which we interact with each other. We're not, I think this piece around Cynthia Erivo, and the harm that could be caused by having her in that role. Because we haven't had these types of conversations, I think a lot of people don't understand why that's so harmful and why that is so hurtful.
I agree. I totally agree. Totally. And I want to do that. I want to pull that discussion together. And I think I have some folks that I can get from both sides that would be willing to talk about that. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go area code 414-324. Caller, are you just listening or you like to say something? Okay, just listening.
Doc Rogers.
Oh, yes.
Good evening.
Oh, good evening. Good evening, brother. How you doing? How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Doc Rogers. How are you today?
Okay, great, great.
Good, good. Great show and very good conversation.
Thank
but
you.
I do want to talk about what the sister, who the previous caller, you know, I know that article probably called her and your guest research is coming from the New York Times or whatever publication, just like you had mentioned earlier in the broadcast. A lot of information mm-hmm. about us in our captivity has come from our captors. And if you believe that the captors can tell an objective story,
right.
an honest objective story, then you're quite naive. Because everything the European has done, everything he has done, has been to facilitate, to maintain and sustain the privilege they created, and to shape things in their image and in their interest.
Okay.
And so when we talk about an African coming here and talking about American Africans or American Africans going anywhere in the diaspora, in the Caribbean and truly on the continent with a different attitude,
okay,
you know, speaking because I'm from America, I'm better than you. Oh, because I'm from Africa and we've never been enslaved, but we've been colonized, which is the same damn thing,
right.
you know. So the deal is we are African people.
Right.
And the problem is that we have allowed an entity, Europeans, to continuously manipulate us and divide us, you know,
right.
and keep us from seeking the true liberation and self-determination and sovereignty that we need as a people. Now, Harriet Tubman, God bless her soul, 19 times she goes from the South to the North.
Right.
That's mind-boggling in itself. That's why when they say she's 300 people, that's definitely possible when you go back and forth 19 times.
Right.
You know, so whether the Europeans don't want to, I don't care what they don't want to do anyway.
Right.
But she was bringing people to north of the Mason-Dixon line. And then when you realize that Europeans, Caucasians in this country didn't give a damn about us, whether you were in the north, in the south, in the west. It didn't matter. And the issue of our captivity was an issue only because of the free labor economy of the south against the emergence of the industrialization of the north. It wasn't because we were a captive. Lincoln said it himself. He said, I can solidify the Union without freeing these people. I do so.
Exactly.
It was never an issue about our humanity in this country. Because if that was the case, when we came north or we got free, we weren't treated like we were free. We weren't treated like we were a citizen.
Okay.
You see?
Okay.
So we have to understand that.
Right.
And anything that tells us about some division, were there some of our people selling our people? Yes.
And that's why I
know Caucasians love to you that, well, you sold your own people.
Right.
And that's why
I said a historian has to use critical thinking in terms of assessment and analysis of history. You have to be a critical thinker. You really do. And it's not always going to be in the facts or the printed material. You're right.
And you got to read a number of sources.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Because, once again, I ain't lying, Doc Rogers. I put no faith at all in anything that Europeans say. I've come to this point in my life, I reject every damn thing.
Okay.
And to me, that's how you got to be. These people have been an open and sworn enemy to African people, to our humanity. I hate what they have done to us. I hate that we don't have our language. We don't have our names. We don't, but worst of all, we don't have our mind. We don't have our mind.
Right.
So I reject it all, Doc.
Okay.
Hello, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I know it's cutting off.
Okay.
Cutting off. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Doc.
Okay, thank you so much, my brother. I appreciate it. Okay,
thank
let's
you.
Go. Right, go over here to Brother Griffin, and then I'll get to you, Brother Timothy. I haven't forgot you. Brother Griffin, how you doing tonight? Brother Griffin? Okay. Brother Griffin, are you there? Okay. I might have been on later. Let's see. 757-218? Okay. All right. So I guess he's not with us. Brother Timothy, how you doing tonight, my brother?
Brother, you always have a nice loaded cannon to shoot out, man. You have a sister on there, Miss Jenkins, man. She started talking about art and music. That's another conversation, man. Right. We could just do it with that. But I'm going to tell you, sir, you heard Sonia, and I was in graduate school, and they had a course, The Slaves of Narrative. And Sonia Sanchez team taught it while I was a student with Dr. Kosher. And Sonia had to leave because she was doing work on the road with her writing. You know, she's always around, right. Mary Barack and things they were going on their way. And we had Aquiano, we had Douglas, and we had David Walker. But it was important to me that when we did Douglas, that I had to always had to have Harriet to talk about. Because right. They're very close in age, if people didn't know that.
Right.
Just right, they're very close in age. And they were friends. And I had, one of those things I had wrote a position paper on the male and female on Anne Frank and Wiesel. So when I did a paper, I did one on Tubman and Douglas, okay. Because I wanted to see and talk about the woman's, what she thought in the eyes of being enslaved in captivity and what Douglas saw. See, you have that male, what was going on in his head, and the female, what was going on in her head.
Right.
I thought that she was brilliant, man. When I mean brilliant, I knew she was worked as a spy.
Okay.
I knew she had disguises. I knew she, you know, she was married more than once. She married a man, her second marriage, much younger than her.
Okay.
I thought that I also knew that in Douglas' writings that you talk about romanticism. Douglas might have started off a narrative of slave one way, but the more he wrote, the more he romanticized about what was going on.
Okay.
I'm going to see the movie. I think it's important to see it. And I think it's at a crucial and important time because the woman to me in our revolution is very, very important.
Yes.
So when I'm around Catherine Cleaver and Angela Davis, because they were the first ones on the forefront to me at 58, right. And I saw a woman that was willing to fight and pick up arms like a man, the first thing that comes to my mind is Harriet Tubman.
Harriet Tubman.
Because you had those women in California that were throwing down like the men,
yeah.
Against Rice, against the constable on patrol.
Right.
So I like this woman that you have here. I like all the stuff that you, Dr. Rogers, and I want to listen more because I want to hear more.
All right. Well, I surely appreciate it. Yeah, Sister Lachey has been doing a wonderful job. She is definitely so. I appreciate it. I actually, the reason that I was able to meet her is the young lady now that's on the line. If it had not been for her, Jamie, we probably wouldn't know each other. But Marbita, Lotus J, she's on. I don't know, Lotus, you want to say something? Are you just listening?
Well, you know, I'm just popping in and listening. I like to drop in and listen. How you doing? How you doing, Jamie?
Hey!
Good to hear you. Always good
you
to
too.
See what you're doing and staying active. And the tributes that you've done have been beautiful. So I'm definitely a strong supporter of Boom, as well as Jamie Lachey and Dr. Rogers and the
okay.
Black Reality Think Tank. I just think there's some wonderful organizations coming together for very important cause. And, of course, Soul Sister has to support the original Soul Sister that stood up, which is Harriet Tubman. So we're very
right,
excited about
right.
the
right.
movie coming out and just want to support it and be a part of that movement because it is. It's a very crucial time in history right now. There's a rise in Black folks
mm-hmm.
as well as women. And so she encompasses both, and it's really, really important for us to pay attention to the history as we move forward into the future. So I'm just dropping in to be a support and listen and learn, learn, learn.
Okay. Well, listen, I thank you so much for that introduction to Jamie, and I've been able to work with her continuously and as well as continue to work with you. Your organization, Soul Sisters Stand Up, is very powerful. It is a Harriet Tubman organization, and you're doing a powerful job. I know you've got an event coming up very soon in December.
Yes, we do. We're working on our holiday gala, which is a fundraiser for our nonprofit organization, and currently we're raising money for our communal living home, which is to bring some of those powerful women together so we can be a support to each other as we move forward.
All right.
So we definitely, anybody that's in the DFW area, we would love for you all to come and participate and support that. And it's really a great organization that's doing things not only in DFW, but that is where we originated. So we would love for you all to look and get involved and see how you can be a support to you as we are a support to others, because we definitely believe in being a support to others in the community as well.
Okay. Give us your website so that anybody in our audience might be interested to look at your website. Why don't you do that?
Can definitely look us up online. The website is Soul Sisters. It's SoulSistahs.org. And that's our website. And then if you go to social media, if you look up Soul Sisters Stand Up, Soul Sisters Stand Up, you'll find us on social media. And again, we have a lot of events. We do Sisterhood once a month. And we talk about leaders in our community, such as Harriet Tubman. And of course, we will be addressing that at our next Sisterhood meeting, which is this Monday coming up. And we're going together as a group to go and see the movie and have a talk back as well. So anybody in the DFW area that's interested, definitely reach out to us, and we'd love to have you.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Lotus. I appreciate you.
I'm going to tune back in. Thank you, Doc.
Okay. We'll be talking soon. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Sister Yan, listen, now you're talking about a Soul Sister Stand Up, Harriet Tubman. This is another example of a living legacy like that. Sister Yan, how you doing? Sister Yan, are you on? Hello, Sister Yan. Okay, I guess she's not on. She's on a call, but she's holding. So anyway, we'll hopefully can come back to her. Okay, Jamie, we're kind of, as always, moving toward that bewitching hour where we close down. What about some closing thoughts? One of the things, Lotus definitely brings this point home, of talking about Harriet Tubman definitely does awaken that whole vision and idea of Black women, you know, who are working exceptionally hard for the liberation of our people, mm-hmm. too. And they really are. We have a lot of examples of strong Black women. And then those that we don't happen to know about, who just are out here every day taking care of their children and going to work and trying to provide directions in their community. You know, just that group. The Black woman gives a lot. You know, she's and I'm always mindful of the book by Angela Davis, Women, Race, and Class, which does a powerful job of explaining what the role of women is in our community. So, what are some of your closing thoughts about how this speaks to powerful women?
Oh, that's a big question, Dr. Rogers.
<Thank you. laughs>
I think Mama Harriet is a critical reminder in some powerful ways and in some painful ways about the role of the Black womb, and I'm going to say womb guardian and woman in this work. The powerful pieces are about this audacity and this ferociousness and this fearlessness that is often, reframed as dangerous, as attitudinal, as problematic, not just by Western society, but sometimes by our own. And I think we have to disrupt that and start to celebrate this power that has existed in us. It's in our DNA from beyond just this time. And so she is a reminder of that. I think the other thing is a number of folks who called in mentioned how powerful it was that she was navigating through the woods in the dark and how many people that she helped to get to the north into Canada. Like, I think it's critical that we do name her spirituality and her connection to spirit. That piece of us that we all have, that we've named as miraculous, it was the thing, a big part of us that was colonized. Right. And you, so it's not just the mental slavery that one of the callers mentioned. It is the spiritual capture of our being that is supported and works to keep us in captivity.
Right, right. Yeah, that is very powerful. And that is so true. And see, those are the kinds of things that we have got to begin to bring out, to talk about and to understand. And like you said, to deconstruct this. We got to do some deconstruction work, and we are doing it. I think it has to happen. People like yourself, people like Lotus, people like Sister Yan, who are out there in the community beating those bushes, and others, you know, Brother Timothy, Brother Pugh, his thoughts and ideas, Brother Oshi, you know, he has, as I said, he has a program himself called African Perspectives, and he really does beat the bushes. So you got to listen. And he does a wonderful job of that. And so we definitely say the carer. In closing, Jamie, let me ask this question. Let's create a scenario here. We've got a young lady right now. She is 11 years old. She's listening to the program. My mother made her listen, talking about Harriet Tubman. What would you say to her, tell her about this struggle that we're in, the energy from Harriet and how that has to transfer to her? What would you say? What would you tell her? Jamie, are you there? Hello, Mr. Shea? Okay. Mr. Shea, are you there? You may have dropped. I may have lost you. Brother Timothy, do you hear me? Hello, Brother Timothy? I don't know what's going on. Always something at the end of the program. Brother Oshi, can you hear me? Yeah. We may have lost a connection here. Hello, Brother Timothy, can you hear me? Well, I'm not sure what has happened. Sister Jamie, you still not able to hear me? Brother White, are you able to hear me? I don't know, not quite sure. Is there anyone, Brother Pugh, are you able to hear me? Okay, we may have very well lost our connection here. I'm not sure if this is still picking up on Uber Conference. We're at the closing hour here. Who accomplished is still recording. Brother Oshie, can you hear me? Well, as I said, we may have lost the connection. That just happens sometimes, and so we're not going to. We'll close out, and we hope to see you next Tuesday. We'll be back here at Black Reality Think Tank from 8 Eastern to 10 p.m. So we thank you all for joining us tonight, and we will see you and be back next week. Thank you.
Must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
How many years must a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Some people exist before they're allowed to be free.
How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry?
How many deaths will it take? Many people have died.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.